Hi, this is Jay Abraham, and I'm here with my interview partner, Rich Shepron. And this is the first experience you're having with us, and we wanted it to be probably the most profound and impactful one possible. So I prevailed upon one of my dear friends and somebody I admire just really, really greatly, Tony Robbins, who's a 30-year master expert at engineering change, at stimulating peak performance, at really and truly creating some of the most profound success achievements in the world. I've been a friend of Tony's, and he's been a good friend and a mentor of mine for 20 years, but he's arguably the world's preeminent turnaround expert because he's been called in for more people in more places and more situations to turn around lives, to turn around businesses, to turn around careers, to turn around sports teams, to turn around literally economic situations, political situations for presidents and very, very high-profile individuals. He basically has done things nobody else I know, and I'm very familiar with over 1,000 of the top experts, speakers, authors, and masterful trainers in the country. And Tony is the expert on expertise. A couple of the distinctions I think are probably really worthwhile for you to know before I tell you why he, more than anyone, we chose to really set the stage for your membership in the League of Extraordinary Minds. American Express Business recently did a survey of all their card members, and they asked, who would you like to be coached most by if you wanted to take your business to the next level? And of all the respondents out there, there were five who were all about the same at the top. Anthony Robbins, Warren Buffett, Lee Iacocca, Bill Gates, and Ross Perot. So Tony's in one of the most stratospheric and rare universes of respect, admiration, and trust in the field of really engineering profound and lasting change and success. Accenture, one of the top consulting firms in the country, named him one of the 50 top business intellectuals in the world, and their criteria was not just, you know, something arbitrarily. They analyzed searches. They analyzed people who were using people's methodology, ideology, and body of work, and Tony was one of the top 50 in the world. You know, he's spoken to audiences of every kind, I think to the tune of 3.5 million people. He's unquestionably the highest paid speaker, but speaker is a disservice to him because he's not somebody who stands up there and rah-rah motivates or captivates, although that's a byproduct of his gift and his skill. He transforms people's lives. He forever positively alters their circumstances. He shifts their paradigm. He transforms their reality, always for the better. And he's been gifted and blessed, you know, by a lot of hard work and some really well-wired brain chemistry and some really, really wonderful mentors to be probably one of the most influential, talented, and gifted men I know. A couple of other things that will just comfort you in knowing why I ask him to set the stage here for us and really get your mind in gear. And probably what's the most important for everyone listening is currently Tony owns and runs 12 companies, but he started numerous other ones. He's had companies that cumulatively have done as much as $500 million annually in revenue. He's sold them for huge profits. So you're talking to the real thing. You're talking to someone who feels what you feel, knows what you're going through, and can help you transcend and transition all the issues you think are keeping you from greatness. He's got a new reality television show on NBC called The Breakthrough, and it's basically going to be him basically intervening and transforming people's life when you watch. I wanted him more than anyone to set the stage for you, our new members, so that you could get excited about how much more is possible for you in your life, in your business, your income, the depth of joy, satisfaction, certainty you could get. And I could go on and on. Oh, by the way, he's He's written five of the top best-selling books of all time. They're published in 14 languages, and he's created one of the most successful and enduring change management methodologies to ever exist, and I could go on and on. But he's a good friend. He's somebody I admire. He's somebody I thoroughly enjoy interacting with. He's somebody I learn from constantly, and he's somebody who's going to contribute unhedgingly for the next couple of hours to you to get you started in this relationship with us. Tony, thank you so much.
Oh, my God. Thank you, but I feel like you're reading somebody's obituary or my father's bio.
Yeah, it's true. I admire you. I admire your body of work. I admire your mind, but thank you.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, Jay, and I hope people, I'm not going to try and go and do the same thing back for you right now. But anybody who's done the homework on you knows why I'm your fan. I mean, I don't think there's an individual that I've ever met in business, and I've had the privilege of literally working with millions of people, who is more focused on finding that difference that makes the difference in business. I mean, I try to do that in life and business, but you've had laser focus on how to do that in business in so many industries simultaneously. And I don't know what the real number is, but I know the estimates I've read before that, you know, you've helped increase in between $3 and $4 billion of increases in sales for businesses. Some people estimate higher. I'd probably be on that side. I've personally benefited from your insights and your work. So I'm on this line not just because I'm a good guy, but because, frankly, I feel indebted to you, and I want people to be exposed to your abilities and your skills, and also all the people that you're going to be introducing people to in this, you know, quote, League of Extraordinary Minds. It seems, I'll be able to talk on this now, a little bit egotistical for me to be even attached to such a thing. But I think the people you're bringing forth and that you're interviewing here, many of them are dear friends of mine. They're the best experts in that area, and I'm excited for people to be able to hear many different insights. And I would just say up front that before we begin, I want to warn people that I am, I'm a force of nature, so to speak. I'm like a, if you're asking me a question, I'm going to go on a run with it because I know we have very limited time, and I want to try to add as much value as possible. And my expertise is obviously doing turnarounds of both businesses and individuals, so I hope is your questions will lead me in a direction where I can add value in both areas, and if you don't, I will anyway. And I just hope that, you know, I do speak rapidly, a very passionate guy. I hope those people that speak in a more gentle tone and tempo won't be turned off and will stick around for the essence of what value I hope we can add for them in the little time we have here. So thanks for having me on. I'm a massive fan of yours, as you know, for more than 20 years as well, and learned so much from you, and glad to be part of this inaugural kind of session here. And let's begin with whatever you want to hit with.
Okay, let's get going, and thank you. It's going to be fun. The question I want to begin with, and the one I think will be the springboard for the entirety of the rest of this session, is how did this amazing and enormously influential journey begin for you? And I know it didn't start with a silver spoon in your mouth, but how in the world did you become the person of such influence, knowledge, and impact? Please, please, please share everything.
Well, I won't share everything, or I'll be picking up all your time, but appreciate the compliments there. I think it started with the one thing that every human being can come back to or reignite, and when they do, their life changes, and that's hunger. I mean, if you ask me, Jay, you know, I've been with 3.5 million people now for 3 decades from 100 different countries. I tell people at this point I could be an idiot, and I'd have to see that there are patterns in human beings, you know, that make them succeed or fail. The ultimate fundamental thing that makes the difference in people is not their intelligence, it's not their ability, it's not their skill, because you and I have seen so many intelligent people that never maximize that ability. It's their hunger. And hunger can come from a lot of places. It can come from pain, or it can come from inspiration. It can come from meeting the right person, Quincy Jones, a good friend of mine, has, you know, created one of the greatest, you know, most best-selling albums of all time. He worked with everybody from Michael Jackson to rappers, from the old guys of jazz who began it all to, you know, the chairman. What's his name? I'm blanking on his name right now.
Frank Sinatra.
From, you know,
Frank Sinatra, Stevie Wonder, all those people.
Yeah, yeah. He's worked with everybody from the old-time original jazz greats to the Stevie Wonders. I mean, he created, you know, Thriller and Bad with Michael Jackson. You name it. This is a man who's worked with rappers to, you know, the chairman of the board. You know, you name it. This is a man who's done it. And he told me that his entire life changed the day that his fingers touched the piano and he heard those sounds. there was a hunger inside of him that was ignited. So for me, that hunger really began, I think, more out of pain than pleasure. I didn't have a great gift where I just touched a piano and it happened, or a paintbrush got in my hand, or I saw a sunset and I drew it. It was more growing up in an environment where I was completely dissatisfied. And I think dissatisfaction can either make you angry, or can, you know, or that anger can be converted into drive. And that's what it did for me. I mean, I grew up in an environment where, you know, when I met my third father, I said, "Mom, I'm confused." You know, we were always financially strapped. One of the reasons I have my foundation, and, you know, I'm proud that we feed 3 million people a year now, and it's all through stuff that started with me feeding two families. That all started because we had no money when I was 11 years old on Thanksgiving. No money, no food. We wouldn't have starved, but we were, you know, we would have figured a way to survive, but we were definitely not going to have a dinner, and somebody came to my house and delivered food. So I think the not having made me want to know why certain people had. And I've had a 30-plus year obsession with wanting to know the answer to this question, Jay, and that is, what is the difference? What's the difference in people? And what's the difference between, you know, the guy that leads and the guy that follows? Why do some people just follow, some people just make it happen? Why do some people talk about stuff and other people really do it? Why do people have the best intentions and then not follow through? Why do people get in a relationship where they really love the person and then they sabotage the hell out of it? You know, I want to know why there were people, because, you know, when I first started growing up and I was looking at these answers, I was like, okay, you know, I want a better life. These people have a better life. Why do they have a better life? And then my answers as a kid were, well, you know, look at them. You know, I grew up in a very poor environment, and there were people in my school that were quite wealthy. I mean, I literally lived on the other side of the tracks physically. The railroad tracks were right beside our house. It would shake, you know, and, you know, they were living in these big mansions. And so I said, well, they have more money, and so they got more love in their life. They, you know, they're able to go on to college. Somebody can pay for them to go to Harvard. I mean, I have this whole story built in my head, Jay, that a lot of people build. And, but when you're honest with yourself, and you don't have to be very honest, all you have to do is live enough life, after a while you realize the truth of the matter is biography is not destiny. You know, we all would love to believe that somebody else had this special gift, but when you look at life and you see people that were given everything, very often their life just sucks. I mean, to coin a term. I mean, it's just like, you know, I mean, to be crass about it, but it's true. How many people have you ever seen that, and anybody listening, think about it. Somebody you know that was given everything. They were totally loved. They were had great family support. They had a tremendous education, maybe great economic advantages. And today, with all that was given to them, they live their life miserable, unhappy, frustrated, or maybe even going in and out of rehab. And then you see people that were just stepped on in life. I mean, literally, where life seemed to get sucker punching, you know, where they were given no economic advantages, no educational advantages. You know, they didn't seem to have much love. They didn't have a great stable family life. Maybe they were emotionally or sexually or spiritually abused, verbally abused. I mean, you know, look at the Oprahs of the world. You know, born to a 13-year-old mother, no father, abused sexually several times by family and friends when she's a kid. She gets pregnant at 13 years old, and she has a baby, but the baby is stillborn. I mean, what would that do to anybody's head? Are you going to say that's going to become one of the most influential women in the world? But that's how life really offers us. So it's not biography. Decisions equal destiny. It's not your conditions. It's your decisions. Yes, the economy has got lots of challenges right now. We've got a level of debt we're generating by the second, by the minute that's never existed in human history. So I'm not one of those guys that, if you're listening today, to say, oh, here's how you turn around your business. Just go out there and be positive. I believe in intelligence. I believe you don't go to your garden and chant, there's no weeds, there's no weeds, there's no weeds, and hope they go away. You see it as it is, but you don't make it worse than it is, so you don't have to try. And then you see it better than it is, so you get a vision of what you're going to do, so you're not stuck with what is, and then you find a way to make that happen. And so for 30 years, basically, I've been looking to see who are the people that are different and what makes them different. And I can tell you, empirically, without a shadow of a doubt, just because of the privilege of the time of life I've lived in and the profession I've had and the way I've lived it, that when you're 3.5 million people, you begin to know that the one competitive advantage above anything else in life ultimately comes down to psychological strength, emotional fitness. The people that can get themselves to make decisions, to focus on what they can control instead of what they can't control, to, you know, come up with a meaning that instead of it's over, this is the beginning, and here's how I'm going to do it. The people that can keep flexing their approach when things aren't working until they find the answer, until they find the innovation, until they find the solution, those are the people that dominate sports, entertainment, business, politics, your local community, and will shape your world. And those are the people that you begin to know their name ultimately, historically, or at this current time in history, because they found a way to create, you know, what I would consider to be the ultimate competitive advantage. And the ultimate competitive advantage to me is they have created a way to add more value to your life than anybody else has. I mean, in essence, think of it this way. If you want to be wealthy, if you want to be successful in business terms, and if you want to be wealthy, in my opinion, in emotional and spiritual terms, there's only one way. Add more value to other people's lives than anybody else is adding. If you're scared to death and customers are not buying and they're not responding, you've got to find a way to add more value. You've got to find a way to do something for them no one else is doing, just a little bit better than other people, and not really, truly, to get that competitive advantage of making them your raving fan. I mean, my whole focus is, if you want the ultimate competitive advantage in business and life, create raving fan customers, whether that be the clients that you have or your husband or wife at home. If you've got raving fan customers, when the going gets tough, they're not going to leave you. They're going to stick by you. You know, satisfied customers will leave in a heartbeat when they get a better offer. But raving fan customers are there with you, and you can't create raving fan customers by a marketing campaign. You create raving fan customers by doing things for others that nobody else will do. And I'm proud that, you know, I don't have to talk about what I believe or whether I do stuff or not, because you can watch anybody's lips move. I say, if you want to judge who somebody is, they become branded by what they do. Don't watch how their lips move. Watch the direction their feet have moved for a decade or two, or in my case, 3 decades, and you'll know the results. So to me, this all starts with hunger, and it begins and ends with finding a way to get hungry, to find a way to help others to meet their needs. If you do that, you have the way that you can make it through any economy, you can make it through any challenge, and most importantly, you'll feel rich and fulfilled inside while you're on the way to getting economic fulfillment and economic riches as well. You can have that as well, but God, how many people do you know that made a lot of money and they're dead inside because they haven't found a way to add value? And if you're going to have that long-term competitive advantage, nothing will do it more than building a brand that people love. You build that where they love you, they love your product, they love your service. In the viral market we live in today, they will get the word out like nothing you could ever buy by marketing, and nobody believes that marketing anymore anyway. The rate of statistics, I read a study the other day, 72% of what people read that comes in the form of a brochure or advertising by the organization doing the advertising or marketing is not believed by the average consumer, but 68%, I remember the exact number, I believe it's 68%, of what a friend tells them people believe. That's what influences them today. So if you want to influence people's friends, influence people by finding a way to add that value no matter what your industry, no matter what your product, no matter what your service, no matter what area of your life you're talking about.
Yeah, that's a great first answer. And we're going to go on. It's going to get better and better. Now, Tony, we want to figure out how you can become that person, how you can add value specifically, transactionally. Let's get into it. We want to talk now about influence, Tony, because influence is foundational to everything you stand for. So the first question is, you know, since influence affects everything, what does it take to influence? But then let's talk about the next level. How do you become a master at influence? Because you teach those. So give us a little foundation and then take it to a higher level.
I was going to say, what does it take to influence? It's probably just understanding one thought, and that's this. To influence another person, you've got to know what already influences them. I mean, think about it, Jay. You know, everybody tries to influence other people based upon kind of their model of the world, what influences them. And so most people are really good at influencing people that are like themselves, and people that are not like themselves, they think they're pigheaded or confused or frustrated or unintelligent or they don't have any style. The reality is, if you're going to become a person of influence, you've got to say, I got to understand what actually influences people. And if I know what's influencing this person right now, then I can bring my product, my service, my idea, my philosophy, whatever it is I want to give to this world, I can bring it in a way where that person will take it in, consider it, and hopefully utilize it, experience it, and hopefully, you know, share it with the world because it touches their lives so much. So I think there, ultimately, what influences people for everyone are two factors. In the moment, what influences us most is the state we're in. Now, when I say the state we're in, I mean the mental, emotional, physical state. You know, simply stated, you know, if you're in a frustrated state of mind, that influences everything you see, every interaction, every conversation you have. It influences your perspective because that core emotion that's, you know, really driving your body, the emotion of frustration, literally overwhelms and colors everything else that you're experiencing. I don't know if you've ever had this experience, Jay, but all of us have. But, you know, ever smash at somebody and really had nothing to do with them, it was just the state you're in? So, Jay, I don't know if you've ever experienced this. I'm sure you have, and most of us have. Have you ever been in one of those situations where you were frustrated with something, it had nothing to do with the person who was talking to you, but they walked up and delivered something a certain way, and you just snapped at them, but honestly, it had nothing to do with them. It was just the state you're in.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we all have been guilty of it at some time, and there's no excuse for being this way, but we've all done it. Well, state does that. You know, somebody can come up, and you can misinterpret something. You can think they're trying to harass you when they were just teasing you, and it's just the state you're in. Conversely, if you're in an extraordinary state of mind, if you're, like, in the flow, if you're in that place where, you know, you just feel like, you know, you're in your creative flow, or you're just really happy, or you're feeling excited about life, and the same stimulus comes in, that same person comes in, you're going to have a totally different reaction to them. You're going to interpret what they're saying in a different way. You're going to connect with them in a different way. I mean, people listening to me right now, I've gotten talking really fast and passionate and excited.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, if they're used to someone talking more slowly and if they were in a more gentle state, it might have been a bit overwhelming for me to start talking at this tempo right now. Because they're going to go, oh, yeah, what is this? This fast-talking guy just, you know, hyping me up on stuff. You know, some people prefer to hear you talking at a different tempo, in a different way, in a different element. So the state somebody's in definitely influences the way you want to communicate with them.
Sure.
And sometimes you got to identify if you need to change their state to influence them. Now, sometimes that's not, you don't have the privilege of being there. So, you know, some of the people that I know you've interviewed for the series are friends of mine, and you look at somebody like Dr. Cialdini, and he'll talk to you about, you know, how to influence somebody before you even open your mouth, how to put them in a certain state through reciprocation or through social proof that makes them literally listen immediately to what you have to say. Or, you know, if you talk to, you know, Stephen M. Arcovy, he'll talk to you about the ways that you can create that bond of trust, because trust is an ultimate state that bonds you with people and will allow you to influence them. If I don't trust you, if I think you only have your own agenda, I know you have your own agenda, but if it's only your agenda and your agenda is more important than meeting my needs, there's no way in hell I'm going to listen to you in the long term. So ultimately, state is what influences this moment to moment, and if you change the other person's state or your own, either by your physical presence, by the style of the copy that you write, by the environment that you create. It isn't just a salesman or an individual that does this, or a great speaker or a politician or a great parent. But all of us ultimately, if we're going to be successful, we have to innovate, that is, create new value for people, and we got to market. We got to convince, influence, persuade, entice, attract people to our ideas, products, or services in order to have an impact in this world, and certainly in order to be successful in business terms. So if state is number one. Long-term, though, what influences us, Jay, is a person's blueprint. The blueprint is really kind of an understanding of what your core belief is about how life is supposed to be, how people are supposed to be, how you're supposed to be. We all have a different set of beliefs, a set of values, a set of rules that say, you know, this is how life's supposed to be, this is how it's not. In fact, if somebody listening right now, if you're listening to my voice, and if I were to ask you, is there an area of your life right now? And Jay, I'll do it with you.
Okay.
Is there an area of your life that you're really, really happy with right now? And let me give a caveat up front that some people say, no, my whole life is terrible right now. It's just, you know, there are too many problems. I got problems here and there and everywhere. Well, if you're fair to yourself, if you're having problems in your business, you probably still have a great intimate relationship. Or if you don't have a great intimate relationship, maybe you're close to your kids. Or if you're not close to your kids, maybe your body is strong. If your body's not strong, you know, then hopefully maybe you got a close relationship with God. You know, there's ultimately, there's an area that you could be happy with. And I'd like you, if you're a listener, so you can understand your blueprint for a moment, just think for a second. What's an area of my life I'm really, really happy with right now in my life? I'm really pleased with, or I could be happy with if I really just thought about it. Jay, what is it for you?
Well, I think it's got to be in my personal life. I'm very happy with my kids, my wife, and, you know, my place in the personal cosmos, not in the business community, but in the personal cosmos.
Well, you should be in the business community. I mean, if anybody who doesn't know Jay, and I'm that sounds like I'm plugging him, I am, because I'm a big fan of Jay. That's why I was willing to do this interview, both to help people listening, but also because, you know, Jay's probably personally been responsible for 5, 6, 7, I don't know the real number, $8 billion. Certainly, I know several billion dollars worth of increases in businesses, so your place in the business world is there. But in your personal life, what is it? Let's say your relationship with your wife or your kids, why are you really happy with that right now? Why?
You know, it's very fulfilling to me. It's quite wonderful. I mean, and you've known me in my life when I was a hard-driving, you know, triple-A-type person. I'm pretty mellow at this juncture in my life. I appreciate my humanity, my mortality, and I so much appreciate other people. I just enjoy that portion of my life at an extraordinary level.
That's great. And what you'd be saying, and if I asked anybody and dug underneath and they say, my relationship's going well, or I'm happy with my career, I'm happy with my business, if you dig into why, they'll ultimately tell you, in essence, it's the way that I really want it to be. My life conditions today match my blueprint. They match how I'd like it to be. Now, you may have additional goals or desires that are larger, but it really matches up. Now, if you look at somebody who's unhappy, or if there's an area of your life, you're listening to me right now and you want to understand what influences you, think about what you're unhappy with, what you're not pleased with. Now, some people won't use the word unhappy because their life has to be perfect every moment. But, you know, truth of the matter is if you're growing, whenever you achieve your goal, it's never enough because life's not about, you know, achievement. Life is about growth because when you grow, you got something you can give and contribute to other people. So, you know, it's never the end. If you think it's the end, you know, you're in trouble, you know. So I think it was John Wooden who said, it's what you learn when you know everything that really matters, right? And he's the greatest, you know, basketball coach in history, won 11 out of 12 NCAA championships. So, but if there's an area you're not pleased with, or if you were to focus on you're not happy about, you know, if you're listening to me right now, what's that area? And you'll begin to see what influences you and why. And Jay, for you, if there's an area you're not as pleased with, what's an area you're not quite as pleased with right now?
Probably my long-term focus. I mean, you know me as being very strategic for other people, but in my own life, I'm very instant gratification oriented, and I tend to be very impatient.
Okay, so here's what's interesting. If your person listening said, well, I'm not happy in my relationship, I'm not happy with my finances, I'm not happy with my business right now, I'm not happy with my body, and I go, why? They'll say, well, because I'm 10 pounds overweight or 30. Or, well, we just don't see eye to eye in our relationship. Or, well, you know, with the way the economy has had this crunch, you know, we've lost, you know, credit resources and we don't have as much capacity to advertise or whatever it is. People aren't spending the money. All they're saying to me is, in this area of my life conditions today don't match my blueprint of how I think it should be. And so I feel dissatisfaction, unhappiness, pain, frustration, whatever the level is. If it's really different than what they expected, they get really upset. If it's only a little bit different, they might feel mild discomfort. In your case, for example, it's more mild discomfort, or you'd change it, because I know you, Jay. You know, you have an idea of like how it should be, but you love the fact that you have so much freedom in your life to do what you want, when you want, where you want. I don't think that's bad. But your blueprint, your mental blueprint says, I should do it more this way. And it doesn't match, so you have some mild, you know, it's not as good as I wish it were in that area, but my life's so good in other areas, who gives a damn? That's usually what happens with you. I bring this up because to understand you, Jay, to influence another person, you have to know what all the influences are. The first person you should start with is yourself.
Great point.
And so your states influence you, and the second thing, and that's what influences you, bar none, in the moment. If in the moment you got hungry enough, excited about some strategic element, you'll do it right now. You'll put the effort in. But if you're not, you won't. But if your blueprint says this is how life's supposed to be, then you're going to keep drifting back. You're going to keep looking at this. I bring this up because, again, my voice is a perfect example. I'm conscious of it because I just want to add so much value here, and I know I talk way too loud and too fast, you know, for a telephone call, and I can't see your eyes and face or someone I'm talking to, so I'm just kind of going like a bullet train here.
Well, you're making it great. You're very, very logical, very sensible. Go ahead.
Well, I understand, but to the listener who may still be listening, who I wasn't sure of, there's people's blueprint is that if you're talking fast, you know, that you're not feeling it, or if you're, you know, if you're authentic, you pause for periods of time. And I'm more than capable of that, but I go crazy when somebody, I have a different blueprint. My blueprint is, damn it, you know, if I've only got this much time, give me everything you got that's valuable. So I'm kind of opting for my blueprint, since I don't know who I'm talking to straight across from me, and just trying to become aware at times that I need to balance this thing out. But my point to answer your question is this. To master influence, you have to become a person of influence. You've got to decide to master it, not dabble in it. And it all begins with saying, okay, everyone is different. Everyone is unique. But there are some universal principles. If I'm dealing with an individual, if I was sitting across from somebody right now, Jay, who did not have, let's say, the capacity to take in information as fast as I know you do and probably most of your listeners, then frankly, I would completely change the pace. I'd operate from a different frame of reference. I'd go into a different state. Or if I found out that your blueprint was, I don't give a damn about anything related to innovation, all I care about is marketing, then I'd put my focus on the marketing. So once you know how the blueprint functions of that person, you're going to be able to meet their needs. Now, you know, the other component that you brought up earlier, this question about, you know, innovation and how do you really make something better constantly? Well, the way you make it better is you make sure it meets people's needs. And again, I want to remind you, you know, my target here is I know your audience is a business audience, and that's my core audience as well. People that own their own business, people that have created a business, or people that are managing or leading a business. I mean, those are the people that I work with every day of my life. But they're also known as human beings. And my goal for this little interview of ours, I have a secondary agenda, which is I want to make sure people leave this call not only doing better in their business, but they remember what it takes to have an extraordinary life. To have an extraordinary life, you do the same thing you do in business, but you do it for your family. You do it for your friends. You create raving fans by adding more value to everybody around you, your children, your husband, your wife, or anybody else. But here's what you got to understand. Everybody's idea of added value is a little different. There is something universal that I found because I've had this unique laboratory where I've had the privilege of spending 3 decades of my life where I've traveled to more than 100 countries and I've been with 3.5 million people. I'm talking about face-to-face. I'm not talking about 50 million people getting books or tapes or something like that. I'm talking about people I've actually interacted with, as you know, Jay. And so as a result, at this point in my life, I could be an idiot, and I'd have to be able to notice that there are patterns in human behavior, patterns that make people crazy, patterns that make people happy, patterns that make people succeed, patterns that make them fail. And so the essence of all my work is taking those patterns and teaching the people. And then, you know, not normally like this in an audio, just throwing it all in one quick little tape, but breaking it down and getting people to do it, or an event, putting them in immersion, and once you teach it, getting them to use it. But having that caveat, let me just give you the core of what I think ultimately influences your blueprint. What determines whether or not you create raving fan customers is whether or not you meet their needs. And while there are unlimited needs, we can talk about the need for, you know, making a difference, the need for love, the need for joy, the need for happiness, the need for food, the need for shelter. There are 6 core human needs, psychological needs, that if you meet these needs, then anyone that you're dealing with will experience an experience that makes them a raving fan. They'll be fulfilled. Maybe the best way to describe it is they'll feel like they fall in love. I mean, maybe a way to think of it is this way. You know, I have to take people that won't sit for, you know, a 3-hour movie that someone spent $200 million to make, and I got to get them, if I'm going to fulfill them, I want to train them. I don't want to just do a quick little hour talk. I want to get them immersed where they don't just understand this stuff intellectually, but they do it. To get them to do it, I've got to condition them. To condition them, I've got to put them in immersion, like learning a language. You don't go one word at a time. You go to France and they'll live there if you can, or Italy or whatever. So I take people, and I do my short seminars, 50 hours, as you know, 5-0 in a weekend.
Yeah.
You know, people are sitting for a 3-hour movie, and I got somebody like, you know, in front row recently, I was in New York, we had 12,000 people, 3 days a night, 4 days, really, right? I got in the front rows, you know, Anthony Hopkins, you know, the actor, Sir Anthony Hopkins, who's been dragged there by somebody and, you know, saying, I'm not going to sit for more than 2 hours. I'm not going to sit for a day, much less 3 days. And the guy won't, you know, I meet his needs so much he doesn't leave. He's there. Now he's a friend and a raving fan. Or I got a soccer mom from Germany who's got a headset on because they're translating 4 languages simultaneously in a room of 12,000 people for 50 hours. How the hell do you do that? You create raving fans by adding more value, and you do that by knowing what influences people. I know how to change their state. And I know how to meet their blueprint by meeting, ultimately, their 6 human needs. So that's a long setup for what I want to give you here because it's worth listening to if you're still with me on this. These 6 needs are the reason why anybody does anything. They're why they buy. They're why they try. They're why some people hold on to their problem, because their problem meets their needs. Now, what are these needs? And let's look at how, you know, you can meet these needs. The first human need is the need for certainty. That need to feel like you can be comfortable, that you can avoid pain, or that ideally you could have some pleasure. But at the very minimum, certainty you can be comfortable. It's a survival instinct at its base. You know, you think about it, Jay, if every day you're in pain, continuous pain would equal continuous damage.
Mm-hmm.
Continuous damage would equal ultimately death. So you have a need for certainty. And if you can meet this need for people where they're certain that your product, your service, the relationship they have with you is certain, that you're going to deliver for them, that you're going to be there for them, you create a bond with that customer, with that client, with that son or daughter, with that friend, with that husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, intimate, lover, that is very, very strong at space. Now, if that's all you meet, people eventually get bored out of their mind. Because certainty is one of six needs, and not everybody values certainty as the top of their list, but we all have it. The second need we have, ironically, is the need for uncertainty, which is the need for surprise, the need for difference, the need for stimulation. And who has that need? Every human being alive. Whenever I'm in seminars, I ask people, usually will say, you know, tell me something. How many of you out there love surprises? And, you know, you can guess them how big the audience is. Almost everybody raised their hand. And you look at them and go, bull. You all love the surprises you want, right? The surprises you don't want, you call problems. But you need those, too, to feel alive. And so a customer has got to feel not only certainty a product is going to give them what they want, but variety. There's no way. You know, the reason most people don't go to a seminar or even listen to an audio program is they go, oh, there's no way that someone's going to capture my attention for that time and really immerse me. But I've created so many techniques to create so much variety, so much surprise, that you're alive every moment. Third human need, the need for significance, the need to feel unique, special, important, the need to feel needed. Every human being has this need. And if you can link your product or service to making that person feel like they can do something significant or be more significant, you will own that customer, you'll own that client, you'll have a deeper relationship with that human being. And so when you talk about this, when you think about significance, you can get it all kinds of ways. You can meet all your needs. You can get certainty by, you know, lowering your expectations and you can be certain. You can get certainty and comfort by eating a bunch of food, overeating, or smoking a cigarette. You can get variety by, you know, going to a movie or taking a drug. You can get significance by, you know, smacking somebody and picking a fight. You know, you can be significantly good or significantly bad. You know, I always tell people the reason we have violence in our society and always have is if somebody feels insignificant, it's hard to build the tallest building in town, but sure, you can burn down the, you know, the tallest building in no time, as we learned on 9/11. If I feel insignificant, I can become significant through violence very, very quickly. You can get significance by the way you dress, significance by adding more value, being more generous than anybody else is around you, and you get that significance by learning or having a skill set nobody else has. But if you meet your customer's need for significance, you'll own them. I'll give you a good example. Steve Wynn is a good friend of mine. He's just a brilliant man. If you're not familiar with him, he's the guy that basically built modern Las Vegas. Back, 40 years ago, he went to Vegas and he started to help rebuild it. And about 20 plus years ago, when, you know, nobody really built a new casino, and at that time, I think 10 years, he came up with a Mirage and built it in a place where there was nothing else in Vegas. It's now the center of Vegas. And he built the volcano and this whole idea. And then he built, you know, the Bellagio and, you know, billions of dollars and built that water fountain he thought of with the dancing music. And, you know, and now he's built the Wynn and the Encore and so forth and so on. He's just an absolute genius. When he and I first met, it was a New Year's. And I was digging in with his mind because I wanted to find out, you know, what his ideas were, his strategies were. I want to know, how do you rebuild a city? Because this guy single-handedly basically set the standard and did that for the city of Las Vegas. And so we talked for hours and hours and hours, and then he asked me, he goes, okay, tell me the core of what makes you tick. I mean, how are you able to do these turnarounds on, you know, an athlete where you do it in one session and it's there, or a kid who's suicidal and turn them around? How do you do it? I said, well, because I'm a person of influence, and all leaders are, so are you. I know what really influences them, and at its core, I know what their needs are, and I know a person's going to kill themselves only because they feel completely insignificant. They feel uncertain. They feel like there's no, and I went through, that this person feels like they'd rather be dead because being alive is more painful than dying in their mind, and all I got to do is change what they associate to that. Or an athlete, how I give them certainty back. You know, I get them back in that place where they can perform at that highest level. You know, an athlete loses certainty. You see them run out on the field, and it's like, you know, a kicker in a football game, or an NBA player going to go for a free throw, and you look at them and you go, they're going to miss it. And sure enough, they do. You knew because you could see they were missing certainty. And I know how to condition that into somebody so that they have that edge again. So I'm walking him through this. When I got to significance, Jay, he went crazy. He goes, stop, 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 stop. He goes, that's the one, that's the one. I said, what do you mean that's the one? He goes, Tony, that's where I made all my money. That's what made me a billionaire. I said, what are you talking about? He said, if you can get people to link significance to your product or service, you own them. He said, and people will pay more for significance than just for certainty and just for variety. I said, what do you mean? He said, look, every hotel I've ever built, I made it the most unique one, the most special one, the one that everybody wanted to be at. And he started walking me through how he did it with every single hotel, how he topped the one before. He said, look, you know, if you see a woman's handbag and it's $19 and this one's $5,000, he said, the only way you get $5,000 is pretty much the same cloth and same material, not that much difference, certainly not a 5,000% difference. He said, it's because you've made it unique or special. You've made it desired. He said, that's really the secret in business. So significance I spend a little time on is the third human need. Fourth human need is connection and love. Who needs connection? Who needs love? Everyone breathing, including the person, goes, I don't need any love. I don't want any love. They're just afraid of losing love or the pain they associate from the past. But we all need it. If you can link meeting the need for connection to your product, boy, or love to your product, people will spend any amount of money, time, or energy for it. You know, AT&T did this years ago. I don't know if you recall, but I remember back in the Young and Rubicam days, a great marketing company, you know, branding company at that point, AT&T ran these studies, and they found this problem, that they wanted to increase the amount of time people spent on the phone. People made many calls. This is obviously, you know, almost 50 years ago, 40 years ago now, I guess. But at the time, they were looking at saying, okay, what do we do to get people to spend more time on the phone? That people would call, but a different generation of people, people that are older, would make brief calls. Younger people would be on the line longer. And what they did is they interviewed people that were their primary demographic, and they found these people said that, you know, calling somebody was impersonal. This is obviously way before the internet, email, instant messaging, and things of that nature. And they said, you know, the problem is, you know, I want to see the person face-to-face. I want to be with them. And they said, you know, what's the difference between talking on the phone and being there in person? They said, well, when you're in person, you can reach out and touch that person. Well, a guy at Young Rubicam struck onto that and said, you know what we got to do? These people call to set up a time to visit, but they don't visit. They don't spend deep time. We got to make them feel like they're in the presence of those people. So they came out with those ads that some people are ancient enough to remember, you know, that AT&T reach out and touch someone, where they would literally show this person calling their grandma, grandpa, uncle, aunt, or whoever it was, and there they were on the line, and there was all this emotion and music, and they were connected, and at the peak of it, reach out and touch somebody. They created connection by picking up a plastic device and talking into it, something at the time seemed completely irrational, stupid, and ridiculous. So you can meet these needs in any way. Fourth, so that's the fourth human need, connection and love. Fifth and sixth, real quick, the first four, everybody finds a way to meet in their life. The question is, do they meet them 0 to 10, and they do it in a good way, an empowering way, or a disempowering way? We all find ways to do it. So you can meet these needs in a variety of ways. The final two needs, number five and six, are the spiritual needs of the human being. That is, the need to grow is number five. We all grow or we die. And we feel alive when we're growing. We feel dead when we're not growing. You know, I always tell people if you want to be happy, just focus on one thing, progress. Progress equals happiness. If you've not achieved your goal yet, but you're making progress, if you leave this interview today and you say, you know what, screw it. I'm going to make this change in my business, or I'm going to go master this, or I'm going to go enroll a new class, or I'm going to go, you know, start something new. I'm going to just start walking. You may not be at your goal yet, but if you just start working out, you're going to start feeling better immediately as soon as you make a little bit of progress. If you start to make your relationship better even a little bit, you're going to feel alive and happy. So growth is life. And then the sixth one is you got to contribute beyond yourself. You've got to have a meaningful life. You can't just get things. You got to give things. So one example of that I can give you just real briefly from an influence perspective is Betty Crocker, a name everybody knows, been around for half a century. After World War II, I think it's General Mills, whoever owns Betty Crocker, I'm probably forgetting the right company, but they came out and they did these ads and they did these focus groups first to see what do women really want. They were now in the workplace, you know, they weren't just sitting home cooking anymore, and they wanted to be able to bake cakes and they didn't have time, so they came up with this idea of this instant caking mix, an instant cake baking mix. And all of the, you know, during all of the focus groups, Jay, all the women said, oh, my God, we would love something we could make immediately like that. Took no time, et cetera, et cetera. But when they actually created the product, they had a giant problem in their hand because nobody bought it. Nobody bought Betty Crocker in the beginning. So they brought in this social psychologist. He was actually a guy that was related to Freud. Freud's like a distant cousin. And he did these focus groups with women to find out why they wouldn't use the product. And they had them freely associate. And what he found out was they felt guilty that they didn't contribute anything in making this case. Because women of that day were all trained that you have to make a contribution, and your contribution is through, you know, baking is one of those contributions. And to do it instantly took no effort, so they felt guilty, so they couldn't enjoy it, so they didn't do it. So all he did is he came back, and he said to the people running the Betty Crocker product line, he said, all you need to do is this, add one egg. And he said, but the recipe doesn't need an egg. He said, it doesn't matter. Tell them to add an egg, and the idea of breaking open that egg, putting it in there, and adding that personal touch psychologically will make them feel like they're making a personal contribution. And he said, watch what will happen, and you know the rest is history. Betty Crocker to this day. By the way, if you ever want to make a cake with Betty Crocker, you don't need to add the egg. It's all psychological to meet your needs. So I'm telling you this because I don't care if you're Apple Computer. Apple Computer has raving fans because they add more value. They're always making it better, but they're meeting people's needs. There's absolute certainty if you're an Apple user that this is the best product in terms of durability and use. If you've ever gone and used Windows of any version, you know that you regularly got things that are stopping you, clicking you up, virus protections, and all that crap goes away the minute you got Apple. You got something that's solid, it's strong, it works, it's consistent, and people love that certainty. But if it was just that, it would be the most boring product in the world. It also has enormous variety. You never know what Steve Jobs is going to come up with. Right? You don't know, you know, he's going to create a new, you know, new interface, a new way of using pictures, a new way of doing movies, a new way of innovating and creating more pleasure in your life. Most of Apple's products connect you to something or someone, not just through the web, but the way they've done pictures, the way they've done music, the way they've done things that make us very emotional and produce connection, emotion, and state alteration in us. That's been their focus, and doing that better than almost anybody else. By the way, I have no stock in Apple, and I'm not promoting it because someone's asked me to. I'm just an Apple fanatic like many other people, millions of other people. But ultimately, Apple's always growing. They're always doing something that allows you to be able to do more with less. And contribution, not everybody meets those final two needs anyway, but most people feel like, wow, it's contributed to my life in a significant way. Look what I can do with this quick little video of my son's baseball game or these pictures in a slideshow and a piece of music in a heartbeat. It allows them to have something even that they can give with other people, which is in that area. So what's true for a company is also true for you personally, because I want to make sure that if you end up hanging up on this call eventually or just listening to this audio, that you're going to say, look, you know, I'm going to make my life better. I'm going to meet more people's needs. I'm going to be a person of influence. And to do that, I'm going to start thinking about, am I meeting my husband or my wife or my son or daughter's need for certainty or not? Am I really meeting enough variety in this relationship or in this product or service or in the way I'm delivering this product or service to my customers? You know, am I really providing enough significance for people? Am I really, you know, creating a connection with them or helping them connect with someone else? Do they feel like they're growing? Our product is growing and improving. Is this something where they feel like they're contributing? If you can meet one of those needs, people will have an interest in your product. If you'll meet two of those needs, you'll have people that were pretty excited about your product, maybe even satisfied. If you meet three or more of these needs on a 0 to 10 scale, where they think of it as a 7, 8, 9, or 10, you'll get people addicted to your product or service. And I'll give you the best example you can test this with. Think of your own intimate relationship. You know, I've dealt with tens of thousands of relationships over the years, and one of my areas of expertise, and part of it is because I failed so miserably in the beginning. No one teaches you how to make a relationship work, so I sought out the best people. What were the tools? What were the strategies? What did I have to know about women that I didn't understand? What did I have to know about myself? What did I have to know about intimacy? And now, you know, the last decade plus of my life, with my life saved, even the best 10 years plus of my life ever I could ever dream of. I trade everything for her with no exaggeration. Jay, you know me well enough to know that that's absolutely true of the way I live my life.
Yep.
But I bring this up because whenever I see couples separating, they will almost always sound like a person who's a dissatisfied customer.
Hmm.
They'll say, well, you know what? They didn't meet my need. They didn't do this. They didn't do that. Or they'll talk about how they gave that person everything. And I'll say, yes, everything except what they needed, or they wouldn't have wanted to leave you. And people don't get that. I mean, I give you the one last example. I'll shut up. I know I'm kind of crazy here, but I just want to add the value. Let me just think of it this way. I've never met a couple where a man or woman came to me and said, look, In my relationship, my husband or wife, my boyfriend or girlfriend, I have so much certainty. I mean, I know them, they know me. I can count on them, they can count on me. It's amazing. And I have so much variety. I mean, I never know what he or she's going to do. They're always surprising me. We're just, I mean, it's such a killer time to be together. You never know what we're going to do. And, oh, my God, I feel like I'm the most important, significant person in their life. I mean, I know nothing's more important to them than me. And I feel so much deep connection and love with them. And we're growing and expanding together. And you know what? I got to leave them. Just, you know, it doesn't happen. If you meet people's needs, you will absolutely have raving fans. And that will be your brand for your husband, your wife, your son, your daughter, your customers, your clients. That's where the ultimate competitive advantage happens. So I know I've dumped a lot on you. Next question.
You're really, you're expansively addressing, you know, a broad spectrum of really critical issues that I think everybody in our membership really need to focus on, and you're unhedgingly giving very generously. We appreciate it. I've got about four more questions. They're all important. The next one is, how do you succeed in business? Very simple. How do you succeed in business? What does a business owner need to be, not only in the competitive sense, but in the successful sense in the current recessionary, ultra-competitive, dog-eat-dog, brutal economy?
Well, why don't we take this and maybe channel this into how do you master things? Because what you have to be competitive today is you've got to be masterful. You can't dabble. You can't
take
just
it in that
try
direction.
Things.
It's fine with me. This, yeah. You know, I want the best answers that are going to help our members get the best outcome.
Okay, well, think of it this way. I can give you an individual strategic or tactical advantage. Here's what to do. But the ultimate advantage still is that you add more value than anybody else, and ultimately that means that you become masterful at your business. You become masterful at both influence, but you can be masterful at truly innovating and marketing and masterful at running your business. So anything you want to master, and again, you know, I contrast this dabbling where, you know, the average person today expects things to be so easy, and they are. I mean, you can go on the internet and get the answer anything you want instantly. You instantly get your music. You can download your books, not just your music, and your movies. And I mean, we live in a world where we expect everything to be so easy that most of us have gotten in the habit of, if it isn't easy after a while, we go do something else. We just do the next thing. We multitask. We don't stay with something and go deep enough to really become the master of it. And when you do that, you can make anything successful. I don't care what it is. Your body, most people dabble with their bodies, so they don't have much energy or they're not in the shape they want to be. But people master their body. You can see it. You can feel it. They got that energy. They got that strength. You know, in relationships, you can see people that dabble versus somebody goes deep and they master it. You know, same thing is true, you know, in finance, in money. You know, somebody that kind of wants to be financially free, but they don't really focus on how to master it enough. They don't give it what's necessary. Then, you know, they end up always having financial trouble. Same thing with a business. So we'll focus on it from a business perspective, but you can take it from any. I think there are three pillars that are so damn simple. Three kind of pillars of a Parthenon, so to speak, because I know it's a metaphor that you use, Jay, that I really like. You know, if you have a one-legged stool, ain't going to stand up. Two, you got to at least have three to have something be solid and stand. So think of these three pillars to progress, three pillars to mastery, three power pillars, if you will. And these three pillars, if they're in place, you'll succeed in whatever you're focused on, whether it's the business, the relationship, the finances, you know, any area of your life. And the way you can test this is not to believe me, but to look at the areas where you are successful. So, for example, if there's an area you're really good at, you're great with your body, or you're great in your business right now, you just want to get better, or you've got great, you know, intimate relationship, or you've got a great relationship with your kids, or the spiritual part of your life is great, or whatever it is, or you're great at mastering money, you got, you know, great at investing. Anything you're great at, I promise you, the first pillar is already in place. And anything you're not as great at as you want to be, this is the pillar to start with. And it's so damn simple. Pillar number one is you must become absolutely obsessed on mastering this area of your life. You have to have a laser-like focus where you constantly focus on this area. As simple, I call it a pillar for simplicity's sake, get focused. If you get completely focused, obsessed, laser-like focus on making progress and mastering this area, whatever it is, your finances, your body, your business, marketing, innovation, whatever it is, if this becomes your absolute focus, you will have the first pillar in place and you will be able to get where you want to go, assuming you bring the other two pillars in place as well. Now, think of how simple this is. if you think of, let's say, something you're really good at, really good at, how much time, energy, effort, or focus do you put in that area of life? I promise you, it's plenty. That's why you're good at it. Or at least there was a ton of time put into it initially and a ton of focus put into it initially. We live in this world where people multitask all the time. You're listening to me right now, and they're doing their text or their email and so forth. Nothing wrong with that, but all the research shows that if you do, you know, if you smoke marijuana, we all know probably, or I don't know if all of us know, but many people know how much that alters your state and how much it slows down your processing. Research has shown that multitasking makes you less effective than doing marijuana in your actual ability to master a task. And there's a whole series of research projects I can dictate, but for time right now, I'm in front of me, I'll just tell you it's true. If you don't believe so, Twitter me and I'll copy you on the actual links. But it's a fact. That's because most of us are wanting an immediate result. We don't put continuous focus. But it's the overly simplistic metaphor is you take, you know, the sun's energy, you put it through even a damn magnifying glass when you're a kid, and you start a fire on a damn leaf. That's what happens when you focus on something in an area. So the area you've done well in, you've done three things. A, you focused on it. B, you've been really specific about what it is you want. And some people might say, well, you know what? I'm not losing weight, and I'm totally focused on it. Yes, you're focused on it, but you're not focused on what you want. You're focused on what you don't want, and you're probably being general. What do you want? They go, I want to lose some weight. Finally, you know, you lose a pound, and you met the goal. I want to make more money. Fine, here's a dollar. Get out of here. You've got to be incredibly specific and clear, because clarity is power, about what it is you want. And if you're crystal clear about something, what it is you want, you know exactly what it is, then the third part of that, ABC, is you know what it is, it's clear, it's specific. Third part, C, is it's so compelling. It's so exciting. It gets you up early. It keeps you up late. You can't help but think about this. If someone says, well, you know, I want to lose weight, that's not specific. I want to lose 30 pounds, that's specific. But by the tone of voice, you can tell it's not compelling. But if it's, I want to lose 30 pounds because I want to feel like I did 20 years ago. I want to feel like when I was, you know, 21 years old. I want to walk by a mirror naked and be impressed. I want to have energy that when I come home, I don't say, honey, I'm home. You go, honey, I'm home. You know, there's a different energy ready to go. See, I don't know what it is for you, but all I know is if this first pillar's in place, it's got to be clear, specific, and compelling. And if you put focus into anything enough, you'll begin to master it. Now, who's done this? Anybody's a master in anything? Jay, how many hours, how many interviews have you done in your life with different types of businesses as an example?
Oh, God. I mean, thousands. I mean, you know that I've been, you know, up till 4 in the morning many, 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 many times. I've traveled the world. I mean, I've done whatever it took.
Well, I know that about you because I've seen you, and you're always adding more. You're never satisfied. It's like, not I have all the answers. Your mastery is your lifestyle. It's like you're always looking. You're the same as me. You and I, probably why we're doing this interview together, we both have done this for years, is we want to know the answer. We're hungry to know more about what matters most. Yeah, I always tell people, what do I do? What's that?
I said, I always want to know who has a piece of the puzzle that I'm lacking.
I agree with you 100%. My focus is I want to talk about things that matter, that people that make a difference, and people who care, but who can produce the results. So ultimately, if you're focused in this area, you're going to have energy. So at Tiger Woods, how focused is he on the game of golf? Probably more focused than anybody ever before him. And the reason was he didn't just decide he wanted to play golf or he wanted to play well or he wanted to win. If you dig underneath, if you look at somebody like Tiger Woods, how focused is he? How laser-focused is he in the area of golf to be a master in that area? You know it. He's totally focused. But most importantly, he's clear on what he wants and why he wants it. Hunger is everything. 80% of achieving anything is knowing why to. 20% is knowing how to. I know that from dealing with millions of people. I know people that got 10 times the intelligence, but they never maximize it because they don't have enough reasons to do so. But you look at somebody like Tiger, you know, and you go get a chance to talk to him, or, you know, if you read an interview with him, or, you know, you do some homework on him, you'll find underneath it, his goal is not to play good golf, great golf, excellent golf, extraordinary golf. His goal is not to win some tournaments. His goal that he defined many years ago is to be the best player that ever lived. That's how specific it is. And he is so driven to do that, he'll do anything. He lifted weights. Nobody in golf did that. Golfers never lifted weights. They wore checkered banana pants, and they avoided the gym at all costs, right? I mean, this guy revolutionized the game of golf by his laser-like focus. But here's what happens. If your focus clear and it's totally compelling, you've got the reasons you're driven, now you need the second pillar of progress, the second pillar of power, and that is you've got to get the best. Get the best tools, get the best strategy, get the best skill, get the best insights, get the best mentor, the best coach, the best map, because the territory is always changing, and somebody who's the best knows what needs to happen now. It's like being on the web and trying to run your business. You know, I mean, the world changes so quickly that if you don't know what's happening, you're left in the dust. You know, the idea that, you know, everything's changing. Well, if everything's changing, you better be changing too, and you better be doing it rapidly. But in order to do it, you need some guidance, because hit and miss is not the way to learn. So early in my life, I met this guy named Jim Rohn. Have you ever met Jim, Jay? Do you know Jim?
Yes,
Jay? Yeah. So Jim's an amazing man. He's towards the latter part of his life now. He's not in good health, and bless his soul, hope he'll be here a lot longer. But he was one of my first mentors. And he taught me something. He said, Tony, success leaves clues. He said, you know, if someone is successful at anything consistently, not once in a while, if they're able to do it consistently, they aren't lucky. They're doing something. Figure out what they're doing. Do the same thing. You'll get the same result. Sow the same seeds. You'll reap the same rewards. It doesn't matter the age difference, the gender difference, the color difference. None of that matters if you take on those same tools. And over the years, I got really good at this concept of modeling, and I know you have as well, which is, gosh, you know, when I was starting out my early business, when I was first in sales for a company, and there was a guy there that was the number one guy, I couldn't sleep at night knowing that this guy could get 9 out of 10 people to say yes, and I believed in this product or service. He was my life. I wanted to share it, and I talked to 10 people, and I couldn't get one. I talked to 20 people and get one person. He talked to 10 and get 9. My view was really simple. Before I even met Jim Rohn, I was like, I got to take that guy to lunch. I got to pick his brain. I got to figure out what he's doing so I can do that. I don't want to sit here and learn by my own experience. That might take me 3, 4, 5, 10 years. So to get the best, you get the best role model, the best tool, the best strategy, and you do whatever it takes. I mean, I had no money. I used to go down to a place called Knight Education, K-N-I-G-H-T. And I know this because just recently I bumped in to the daughter of the man that owned this place. I was like a 17-year-old kid. I would take buses to downtown L.A., which would take me a couple hours to get there from where I lived in the San Gabriel Valley. And this guy had the largest audio collection in history at that stage. This is obviously prior to the web or anything of that nature. And so I go down there, and I'd stock up my money working as a janitor, and I would buy these tapes, and I would listen to these tapes while I was working as a janitor because, you know, I didn't have to talk to anybody in the middle of the night. I was going to high school still. I would listen to tapes while I slept to program my subconscious mind, because my whole mindset was, I want to know what other people already know. I want to be very young and very wise, not very old and very wise. I want to condense decades into days. And Jay, to give you a plug, and it's an honest one, a sincere one, because I know it's what you're building this for, this League of Extraordinary Minds is all about giving people kind of an entrance into that, and you're doing it initially for people as a service form just to let them try it out. Yeah. So I know the value of this. I'm always living for this process. So think of it this way. Even if that first pillar is in place and you are focused, you are clear, it is compelling, you are hungry and driven, you know what you want, you know why you want it, it's your world. Now, if your strategy for how to go about it is old or off or outdated or just slightly off, you're not going to get where you want to go. It's not enough to believe and be positive and be directed and be excited. Those are important components. Focus is power, but only if that focus is in the area that's going to give you the reward. I mean, if your goal is to see a sunset and your strategy is start running east, I mean, I don't give a damn how positive you are. You know, you're screwed. It's not going to happen. So you need that second pillar, which is what I've been doing for my life. And I take all this stuff and try and make it into a format that's entertaining and where you get people to not just understand it, but use it and experience it. Third pillar of progress, third pillar of power for your business or any part of your life. You want to master something, not dabble, get laser-like focus, get focused and clear, make it compelling, get the best tools, strategies, resources. But who do you know who knows what they want? They know why they want it. They got all the tools, all the abilities, all the skills, all the strategies, but they're still not damn doing it. Most people. So the third step is you've got to get going. You've got to get yourself to unlock and unleash and take that consistent, massive, flexible action to get you where you want to go until you get there. So the question you got to ask yourself is, why don't most people follow through? Now, there are going to be people listening to this audio program, and I'm not suggesting I'm the right person for you as a coach, so you could write me off if that's not the right style, and so you probably are still not listening at this stage anyway. But if you get with somebody, and you know they can make a difference, Jay, somebody can make a difference in your business, or, you know, you got somebody like Stephen Covey who can help you with trust in your organization, or, you know, you get somebody like Brad Smart and show you how to, you know, recruit better people, because I think you're going to interview him later on. I saw him on your list, and Brad's a brilliant guy, good friend of mine, too. You know, if you got somebody like that and you don't actually take what you're learning and apply it, then there's a problem. And here's the problem. You have inner conflicts. It's that simple. Here's the inner conflict. You hear all this great stuff for your business and you know it'll work, but your brain goes, yeah, but I have no more time. You know, I know this is what I need to do, but you have the inner conflict says the time isn't there. And as long as you have that inner conflict, you don't follow through. Now, bear in mind, one of the reasons you do that is not you don't have time, is it's overwhelming. I mean, listen to this audio overwhelming. Where do I start? That's why I usually do things one step at a time. That's why I created the 30-day program and things like that, where someone listens to one tape, and we focus on one principle, and I give you one action to do, and then day two, you do the second one, and pretty soon, you got massive momentum because it's chunked down. You're not trying to eat the whole whale in one bite. But it isn't you don't have time. It's that you're overwhelmed. Or if you don't know what's most important to you. But as long as that conflict is there, you won't begin. Or you have this inner conflict that says, you know, I want to take the business to the next level. I want to do these new things. But your conflict is you want to have control and certainty. And what you've been doing, you have control of. You know how to do it, and you're certain about it. This is new. You're uncertain. And so this conflict makes you take two steps forward and three steps back. Am I making sense, Jay?
Yeah, you are. You are.
So the bottom line is, I just want to make sure that people listening get, think of it as you own a business and you're working with somebody and they say they're going to do something and they are really focused on it and they really have the tools, but they're not doing it. Instead of thinking they don't care, dig for a while, usually they do care. Maybe they really want to make a difference. The reason they're not going forward is there's an inner conflict. They want to make happen what you're saying, but they're also afraid they're going to fail, and they don't feel like they have the tools to make it happen. Well, you know, they have competing agendas, competing commitments. They're committed to being in control, but they're also committed to, at some level, empowering everybody. Well, they don't go together. In an intimate relationship, you may be committed to having love in your life, but there's nobody there. You don't have a passionate one. You say it's because all the good ones are gone. No, it's because you have inner conflicts, because A, you want a great relationship, and you want all this love, but B, you have this other commitment that says, I never want to be too vulnerable. They don't go together. Doesn't work. Or, I want to make a lot of money, but I don't want anybody to ever judge me. It's never going to happen. And I don't want to break your bubble. So the way you turn this around is the first step to getting, you know, to kind of like unlocking and unleashing is before you can get aligned, you have to become aware. So you have to become aware of what's stopping you. That's the very first step. Become aware. Sit down and brainstorm or get with your team and go, okay, we say this is our objective. We all tend to be focused. Do we all know why we're doing this? Are the reasons strong enough? You might find that your reasons are strong enough, but your team doesn't have strong enough reasons. Some people do things for pride because they want to be number one. Some people do it for money. Some people do it because they want to have fun. You got to align the focus with the reasons. Two, do we have the best tools? If we don't, let's go get them. But if we've got the focus, it's compelling. We got the tools. We got the strategies. We got the coaching, and we're not doing it. Let's find out what the conflict is. Let's brainstorm so we at least become aware, because you can't change something you're unaware of, or at least hard to change something that you're ignorant of. So what's stopping us? What are our conflicts? What are our competing agendas? What is it that we're afraid of? You know, what are the risks that are holding us back? If you do that with yourself or within your team, you'll have the first part of resolving this inner conflict and getting yourself to take action. Once you get the awareness, next thing you got to do is you've got to mitigate the fear or mitigate the problems. You might say, well, gosh, what if we did it this way? There'd be less risk, more reward. Or, you know what? What if we approached it and we met our customers this way, or we just tested it? We put up a website and we put everything in it, but we didn't make the product yet because that's going to take too long, and we see whether people buy it or not. And when they go to buy, we can say we're sold out and we'll have a set of buyers. We'll know they're ready to buy and we can do it. Maybe there's a way to mitigate this where we don't take as much risk, but we're able to take action right away and get this thing going. Or maybe together you say, you know what, now that I can acknowledge what the inner conflict is, you know what, the risk is worth the reward. It's worth it to let go of some control to get more, you know, flexibility or more scalability or more leverage and have other people help me do this. or it's worth being financially free to have a few people think that, you know, you're not a good person because they don't have as much as you do, and they just think you've done it by no effort and no, you know, not adding value. You know, people do this. They make these things up. It's worth it. It's worth it to have freedom. So you can resolve it that way. So you become aware, you mitigate, and then you align yourself. And when you're aligned, when every part of you, every part of your team says, this is the right thing to do, let's make this happen. Now, alignment is power. In the most simple sense, think of it this way. In a divided, you know, think about the thing. United we stand, divided we fall. When you unite yourself, you're going to move forward. So that's what I do for people, in essence. I work with people to get them so laser-focused on what matters most to them, make it crystal clear, make it so compelling. I help them get the tools that are necessary to give them that competitive advantage so they can do more in less time, produce that result by modeling the best, and then I help them integrate themselves so they get into action, they unlock and unleash in the most simple way humanly possible. That's how you master anything. If you're not making progress with your body, you're not focused on it, it's not clear, it's not compelling, you don't have the right tools, you're doing the Atkins diet instead of something that matters or works long term, or you've got inner conflicts. Same thing is true with your relationship, same thing is true with your business. So, again, trying to give you a, you know, cram everything that I can share with you that matters into a short period of time here.
That's a good answer. We have two more questions, and we have a delightful announcement. And Rich is going to ask the first question. Rich?
Okay. Tony, that's great. And along those lines, you know, I know that you and Jay have talked privately about this, and I was wondering if you could share it with the rest of the group about your two master lessons of life. Would you share them with everybody listening right now?
It sounds foreboding, master life, but you know, this whole conversation, if you're going to boil it down to it, it's saying step up and don't dabble, master your life. I mean, if you want an extraordinary life, don't settle. Don't settle for less than you can be or you can do or you can create or you can give to anybody else. And I think all of us underneath want that. But if I was going to try and boil it down, I was, you know, years ago trying to say, what creates an extraordinary life? And my answer was, it's different for everybody. Like, is it really an extraordinary life, in my opinion, is life on your terms. Right? It's like, you know, for some people, an extraordinary life is spending time with their kids, being able to laugh and have a good time and have a lot of freedom. Some people's idea of an extraordinary life is performing at the highest level in sports or, you know, helping to make a difference in their community or changing the culture or writing a great book or building a company. I mean, it's different for everybody. So life on your terms, though, really requires you mastering two major lessons of life. The first lesson of life is really the science of achievement. And I think most of your listeners are pretty damn good at this, or they're probably not listening. They wouldn't even reach out, and they sure as hell wouldn't be listening at this point in the conversation. They would turn it off going, I can watch, you know, Friends right now, or get on the web and, you know, Twitter something or search something. The bottom line is, ultimately, you've got to be able to achieve what you really want by turning your dreams into reality, and there's a science to that. There are laws of accomplishment, laws of achievement. If you want to master your body, there are certain laws. There are certain laws that if you violate them, you know, we all know, you're going to have a lack of energy. You're going to be run down. You're going to have dis-ease or disease in your body. There are other principles, even though we're all unique, they're universal laws that if you do them, you're going to have lots of energy. You're going to have a vibrancy. You're going to have a strength. You're going to have a vitality or a health to your life. Same thing's true with finances. There are laws of money. Regardless of your age or your gender, your background, your belief systems, you know, you can believe whatever you want, but if you violate certain laws financially, you're going to be broke. You're going to have too much month at the end of the money. You're going to have financial stress. On the other hand, if you align with certain financial laws, you're going to achieve. You're going to have financial security or financial freedom, depending upon which laws you apply and to what extent. So there is a science of achievement, and that needs to be mastered. And, you know, I spent a good deal of my life focused on it. But the other part of what life's about, the other master lesson really is the art of fulfillment. And that is an art. And the reason I say it's an art is because what fulfills a person is as different as our human beings. It's like, you know, I believe in the beauty and power of diversity. When things are all the same, it's pretty boring. Some people want everybody to be just like them. That's the last thing I'm looking for in life. You go to the forest, and the beauty of the forest that, you know, God's created is unbelievable diversity. Every kind of plant and animal, they're all unique and different. So when it comes to being fulfilled, the reason I call it, you know, as the art of fulfillment is because, you know, one person thinks it's beautiful as a piece of art, somebody else might think it's ugly, and neither one of them is wrong. It's just personal preference. But I bring it up because there are some principles that make people fulfilled, and the principle of fulfillment really comes from two things, and I mentioned them earlier, but I want to repeat them, and that is, if you're going to feel a life that is meaningful, if you're going to feel like your life really matters, then life has to be about growing and giving. You know, that's, I think, one of the beautiful things about picking a career where you're a business owner or a business leader is that you're rewarded to the extent that you can add more value to other people's lives. If you can truly keep growing, keep finding a way to innovate, keep finding a way to beat the competition or not even have competition because your brand becomes so strong, the value you add is so strong that you dominate your field, the only way you can do that is really understand your customers' needs and keep growing and keep giving them what they need. Well, the same thing is true in an intimate relationship, and the same thing is true spiritually. We grow or we die. You know, we give or we feel dead inside. And, you know, I've had friends, and I know the two of you have got some friends that have been incredibly successful. I've got one buddy that sold one of his companies and literally netted more than $1 billion in his net earnings out of it. And cash-wise, I think he had about $600 million at one point, just in cash. And I remember when he sold the company and he was out of his mind. He felt like, you know, the greatest thing that ever happened. And I remember seeing him a month later. And I remember seeing him like 3 months later. 3 months later, the guy was going crazy. And the reason was he thought that the secret to life was to just achieve your goal, and that was it. But when he had his company, he had something that every day was demanding something from him. You know, he, you know, had to grow. He had to figure out solutions. He had to be able to adapt. You know, in that company, he was meeting all six of his human needs. I mean, think about it. He was in that company, I think, for 30-something years. So, you know, he had total certainty about his ability to make a difference there. It was always variety because he had so many employees and so many activities. And if you've got business, you've got challenges, good or bad. You've got challenges. They're always there. Things are always changing. Tons of variety. He felt significant, like he could make a real difference with his company, with so many people in his company, for his customers and clients. He felt a connection to the products and the services and the people and the history and the clients. He was growing because he had to, and he was always contributing something. He was meeting all his needs at 10, 10, 10, and it was love for him. If you talk to him, he never talked about work being a burden. It was just like he loved what he did. He sold that and traded it for a bunch of dollars, more dollars than he could ever spend, and he was miserable. And, you know, guess what he did? My daughter figured it out. He figured out he was going to go try and buy the company back. He couldn't do that, so he went and started a bunch of new companies so he could go do it again. You know, in the Bible, it talks about 6 days labor and 1 day rest. And I don't know, I'm not telling anybody what to believe religiously or spiritually, but I do know one thing. You know, almost every religious book has a formula for success, formulas. And one of those is we need to be growing and giving. We need to be contributing. We need to be engaged. We don't have to be paid for that work, but we have to do something to have our life feel meaningful. So we can't just achieve. We've got to experience that art of growing, giving, and if I can add one more word to it, it's celebrate. Some people have got the greatest life, but they don't celebrate it. And I think celebration is an art. When I have people come to events with me or I work with an athlete or a business person, I usually get them to stop first and celebrate what they've got because we've forgotten. We've forgotten how great we have it. You know, you look around, we live in a world where two-thirds of the planet lives on $2 a day or less, where, you know, a mosquito net could save the life of family members and they can't afford, you know, $5 to make that happen. I mean, we're living in a crazy world where most of us, our worst problem is somebody else's best dream. But when you lose perspective, you don't celebrate anymore. You don't really, you know, experience the benefits of what life is offering you because you just don't take it in. You're just not grateful. You don't feel the meaning of your life. And so achievement won't give that to you. Again, as I said earlier, you know, success without fulfillment is the ultimate failure. So I'll give you a good example that's only from about, I don't know, 5-6 months ago. I remember reading about this guy, Adolf Merkel. Adolf Merkel was, in 2007, the 44th richest guy in the world. He had $12.8 billion in personal assets. He had a company that was doing $40 billion, not million, $40 billion a year in annual sales, the conglomerate he built up. It's a pharmaceutical company he started out with early in life, and he built that up into this giant conglomerate. And last summer, you know, about 6 months ago, and on the news, I remember hearing that this guy, because I've been in Germany before, so I knew his name, threw himself in front of a train, killed himself. Why? Because between 2007 and 2008, he'd gone from $12.8 billion in net worth down to a mere $9.2 billion. He lost $3.6 billion that year, and he was trying to get bridge loans, and the bridge loans didn't look like they're going to go through, and he killed himself. He literally killed himself, and most of us would look and go, that guy's an idiot. But most of us have the same level of a lack of celebration or appreciation. It's all relative for what we have. I mean, what you and I have compared to somebody, you know, living in, you know, Somalia is, you know, it's just, it's staggering, and yet we don't experience it. So if you want an extraordinary life, you can't just achieve. You've got to master the art of fulfillment by growing, giving, and celebrating. And, I mean, if you think you got stressed, this guy killed himself because of financial stress. His family, I was reading the article, and it talked about the distress he had about financial circumstances, the loans, and the uncertainty about the refinancing made him kill himself. And here's what's ironic for Adolf. Adolf got the loan 2 weeks after he died. They approved the loans for all his companies. His companies are still solvent. So I would say to people, if you want to have an extraordinary life, become an extraordinary grower, giver, and celebrator, if such words actually existed. Grow, give, and celebrate on a huge scale, and you'll have the richness you want. Otherwise, you're going to cheat yourself about what it's all about. So, you know, when it's winter, instead of saying, oh, my God, it's winter, it's so cold outside, it's so dark, you know, customers aren't responding, get good at winter. You know, instead of freezing to death, become great at skiing or snowboarding and getting close with your family. If you do that, you're going to have the extraordinary life that you deserve. And the best way to do that is the ways that we're trying to do here, which is to feed your mind. Every day, stand guard at the door of your mind. Don't let the junk in. Feed your mind with good stuff and take a little more action, and you're going to find you'll make the progress that you've been wanting and the dream you've been dreaming about. Pretty soon you'll be living. That's the essence of what I really want people to know.
And that's a great conclusion. We're going to have one final question. It's not going to be selfish to Rich and I. It's going to be directed to people, and what's your perspective on how to get the most out of the interview service. But first I want to make a couple of very reflective comments. The first is you've overwhelmed us with content, powerful content. You've over-delivered. You've given us more ways in the brevity of a couple short hours on how to override about every limitation, impediment, personal, business restriction that we currently face. And you've been very generous. You've been unhedged, and I'm very appreciative on behalf of everybody. And before I ask you the last question, I want to make a couple comments, and then I want to share something privately that you and I sort of worked out in behalf of everybody, because I'm very, very happy about it. First of all, a statement, and this is for the listener. You can have every business and marketing strategy out there and still not follow through, implement, or execute, and you get nowhere. If there's one thing that separates people that succeed in business massively, financially, in life, it's the power of their mindset, their psychological strength. And to my delight, Rich and I have attracted in the panels we're interviewing, the experts, we've selected the topics, the content, people of enormous mammoth mental stature. You excel, and you've demonstrated it here, but we always try, not for our benefit, but for the benefit of the audience, to try to exact some great advantage for our listeners from the experts that we interact with. And you and I talk privately in advance, and I told you that I've personally benefited a lot. You and I worked together, and I've watched and seen countless people who've gotten enormous benefit out of your UPW, your Unlimited Power Weekend. I've seen people transform their lives from your Date with Destiny. I've seen people really grow monumentally from the stature and the quality of unprecedented expertise you've brought to your Mastery Series, but probably the best foundational starting point you've got is your Ultimate Edge. It's a multimedia program, and you sell it very aggressively. But we were talking privately before the start, and you had remarked how impressed you were that Rich and I have very generously tried to buy everybody their first 9 interviews, not 9 minutes or 9 days, but 6 weeks and 9 separate two-hour interviews. And you said, I'd like to replicate something like that. And you and I were talking. You said, Jay, if you're game, I'm fine letting anybody in your audience experience and try out that program basically risk-free and for 30 days. And I thought that was really great. And Rich and I don't benefit from this, but we know the quality of your work. And I wanted to conclude this before I ask you the last question by just telling people you've offered, and I'm accepting and I'm conveying it to everybody in your behalf because we think it makes a difference, because that particular program is focused on teaching people how to master the inner strength we've talked about in this call. It teaches people the skills and mindset to really, you know, have a higher probability of following through, executing, and implementing than not. It provides tools for them to build their inner strength so they can deal with just about anything that shows up in their lives, and they can always take the correct and the positive and the powerful action necessary. You know, you like to model, and you wanted to model what we're doing, so you've offered, if anybody wants to avail themselves of it, all they have to do is either call your office, and I have the number, and I'm going to give it for you. It's 866-766-7150, or they can go online to www.tonyrobbins.com/free-trial-offer, and I can attest to the fact that it's one of the most profoundly needed and appropriate programs out there, but you're very generous to let our members avail themselves of it. We're making this offer not for our own benefit. We don't profit a dime. We just think it's really very good. That stated, and I'll repeat it at the end one more time, I'm going to ask you the last question, and it's a catch-all question, because you know what Rich and I are doing. You know why we're doing it. You, of anyone, because you are the progenitor of the concept of really probing and CAT scan, really evaluating and analyzing and mining the mind of masters. Can you give a little summary comment to our listeners about what they might do to get the most out of the 9 sessions they're not paying for, but they're going to experience in the journey of experimentation we've got in store for them over the next six weeks? And, I mean, any insight you've got, any recommendations you've got, any suggestions you've got would be gratefully appreciated.
Well, that's very nice of you. I think, first of all, anybody who's listened here knows that my level of passion for having access to experts and being able to peer inside their head or CAT scan their head, as you described, and find out what are those differences that make the difference from their perspective. I mean, the value of that to me is, yeah, I mean, there isn't a dollar amount you can put on it. I mean, this, you're talking about something that, from my perspective, it's about how do you compress those decades into days. I think you're talking about something that's priceless when it comes to being able to learn from the very best. And I think, Jay, I can say without reservation with you that, you know, you're a person that your entire life, what you've done is the same as myself, but in a completely different light. And I think in ways that I don't have the skill set of, you've really dug in and found unique ways of understanding the unique marketing aspects, the pieces that someone can apply to make a difference in their business. And you've done it in so many different industries that I think the one thing that people will not get from this interview, and the reason I'd encourage them to go to the next one no matter what, whether they liked this interview, or hopefully they did if they're listening still, or not, what this interview probably doesn't allow, because you've given me the gift because of our friendship, is the amount of give and take and stimulation that you and I have when we have more time, and where a lot of these things come from is some stimulation you and I have come through in our discussions through the years. So I think that being a chance to hear that, and I also know that Rich has an enormous ability because of his life and business experience to pull things out as well. So long way of saying, it's a priceless experience to give yourself 60, 90 minutes that you can use what I call net time, no extra time, to move yourself forward. And what I mean by that is, you know, everybody, if you look at how they spend their day, they spend a little certain amount of time doing their emails, and a certain amount of time that they're responding to phone calls, and a certain amount of time on the web, and a certain amount of time driving in their car, you know, cleaning the house, working out, whatever the case may be. I look at how can I use no extra time. That's what net time is to me. How can I use no extra time and move the game forward? Because I know when I'm listening to somebody, I know I'm not going to remember everything they said. But if I get one distinction, just one, that gives me an insight about how to make something better with my business, or something better in the innovation side of things, or something better in my intimate relationship, or something better in an area that matters, if I just get one idea and I act on it, the rest of it goes deep in my unconscious, and it'll be there. It'll get triggered by something else in the environment. And in my case, you know, I believe repetition is the mother of skill, so I'll listen to something again and again. But I would say to people, give yourself the gift of taking advantage of the gift this man is offering you, and give yourself a little time when you're driving your car, when you're working out, when you're cleaning the house, lock down, and don't just download these things or get these things. Download them and listen to them, where you don't feel like you're giving anything up. And you may find yourself in front of these sitting down and going, wait a second, I don't want to do anything else. I've got my computer out, and I'm typing some notes out, and I'm done with this interview, and I'm going to write down, you know, six things that I got out of this interview that are distinctions I want to remember that I'm going to follow through on. If I was doing it with me here, I'd say to you, you know, ultimate competitive advantage you've got to have is really creating raving fan customers. I got to add more value by innovating. I've got to become a person of influence. I got to know what influences them. I got to learn how to influence their states. We unfortunately didn't have time to talk about how to do that, but I got to change their state, or I got to understand their blueprint. I got to understand their six human needs, or how can I do this? I'd make a list of distinctions I made and action items to follow through on, and I'd then go do that. Or what are my inner conflicts that are keeping me from following through? So I'd avail myself of the information. I'd eliminate any block I had about time by using net time, and I'd come up with one or two distinctions out of each to follow through on. And I think if you do that, you'll find this, you know, league of extraordinary minds will get you extraordinary results in your business. And I think also many of the principles, I try to relate them to people's personal lives as well, because I think people want an extraordinary life, not just an extraordinary business. And so, you know, you've got a list here of people that are kind of a who's who, that are friends of mine that I really love and respect, who I know will add value to people's lives. So I can, you know, without hesitation, say priceless, take advantage of it, move yourself forward. And obviously, if people want to move forward with me, the good news about what we're offering them, the Get the Edge product, is it's chunking down what I've been throwing at you here in one session into little bite-sized elements that allow you not just to address the inner strength, but, you know, how do you change the body, the mind, the emotions, relationships, and your business? But I just want to make sure that I tell people that I didn't just do this to put information out. I did this because I want to connect you with Jay, and I want to connect you to his insights, and I want to connect you to the people he's going to connect you to, and I hope you'll take advantage of that fully.
Well, you're very gracious, and you should know that an inspiration for us doing this is really watching what you set out to do. You've transcended that in a lot of your work. I felt when you started with your Power Talk series, you were making probably one of the most heartfelt efforts to expand the understanding, the connection, the knowledge base, the action capabilities of people on such a broad spectrum of critical elements in their life. And we're trying to do it mostly for entrepreneurs, business owners, but to your not surprise, most of the quality of people we're interviewing, they have incredible perspectives on balancing your life. The last thing I want to say, again, is a heartfelt recognition of the fact that you didn't have to do this, and even though you agreed to do it, you didn't have to do it so openly and generously and pack as much as you tried in the last couple hours. Again, I can't personally endorse Tony's work enough. I've seen an enormous array of people really transform their lives, and I think that he creates his foundational and his bedrock and his cornerstone products to really get you the quickest start, the fastest out-of-the-gate improvement possible. And, again, for him to willingly let you try it out at his risk is really it's an irresistible proposition, and we don't gain one iota from it, but we think it's meaningful, just like this last 2 hours has been very foundational for you to get the most out of our service. So, again, it's www.tonyrobbins.com, right-hand paren, free trial offer, or you can call directly his office. It's 866-766-7150. You're a good friend. You're a very passionate man who's got an enormous array of knowledge residing in the catacombs of your mind, and when it gets out, it's contagious. We get excited. Rich?
A floodgate of knowledge.
Yeah, and very gracious. And we appreciate it on behalf of all our members. You're a good friend. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. And I'm going to leave people with just one thought. I can remember the day that turned my life around, without going into long detail, was the day I was at my lowest point, and I was driving my little Volkswagen down the 57 freeway and outside of on the way to Pomona, California. And I remember pulling over a little after midnight, and I had this journal because I was so frustrated that I had all this knowledge and skill and ability I'd worked on, and I tried to help so many people, and nothing was working, and I was broke and frustrated, and I have it to this day, the journal. I wrote on a full page one sentence I never forgot, and it's the essence, Jay, of what I think has made you successful as a man, and I'm sure for Rich and for anybody who's listening, when we're most successful and we're most fulfilled. And it's really simple. I wrote down, the secret to living is giving. I think if we've given some gifts here to people listening, then we've done our job, and more importantly, we can feel really fulfilled tonight as we leave this phone call. And I thank you for the opportunity to be able to give.
No, it's our great pleasure. Thank you very much.